Okay, Kami, you're still on deck here for agenda paper 8.
Yeah. So we start agenda paper 8. We received a request to clarify application of EFRIC 14 for minimum funding requirement for future service. The submitter described a circumstance for this submission as explained in paragraph 6 of this agenda paper. In this circumstance, the submitter asked whether the entity should assume that the future minimum funding requirement for future service would apply for the minimum period agreed with trustees. We noted that the level of those contributions will be subject to future negotiations with trustees, although the entity must continue to make contributions to the plan if the plan continues after the minimum period. The outreach result for this issue indicated that similar funding arrangements are common in some jurisdictions. We did not find enough evidence to conclude that there is significant diversity for this issue, but it seems that diversity for this issue exists in the UK. On the basis of our analysis, we think that EFRIC 14 provides sufficient guidance, so we suggest not adding this issue to the Interpretation Committee's agenda. Our proposed wording for the tentative agenda decision is presented in Appendix A. We would like to ask if the Interpretation Committee agrees with our recommendation and the wording in Appendix A.
Am I correct then that the essence of the staff recommendation is paragraph 30 as to the right accounting? Am I correct in that?
Yes. So okay. Paragraph 30.
Mm-hmm. And that's the basis for the agenda decision, obviously. Views on this one? Tony?
I support the staff's conclusion. I think the way they've described the accounting is consistent with the way that I would read IS 19 and IFRIC 14. I only have one comment on the draft agenda decision. In the paragraph that precedes A and B at the bottom, I would delete the words "in the absence of evidence to the contrary," because I think it's saying that you account in accordance with the funding principle rather than a schedule of payments, and I wouldn't want someone to suggest that an intention to renegotiate or something like that might provide evidence to the contrary. So I concur with where the staff's got to with that minor tweak.
Good point. Bob?
I think I understand the staff position to continue to include a funding requirement. My question for the staff, though, is at what amount? Because if you believe that it's the same amount that has previously been negotiated and that's due to expire, I'm not sure I agree with that, because there may be a case where that was to cover some, for a short term, a specific deficit. And I know going forward it's going to be at a different amount, even though I haven't negotiated that, or I believe it's going to be a different amount, even though I haven't negotiated that. So I'm not sure, I'm not real clear on what the staff position is with respect to how much.
Okay, may I?
Please.
We think that a schedule of contribution shouldn't simply extrapolated when there is no ongoing minimum funding requirement for future service, but we think that the funding principles agreed with the trustees should be continued unchanged after the fixed period in the circumstances of this issue. So maybe there are some factor pattern or bills in the submission itself was not very clear about this, but that's what we think. Paragraph BC 25 of EFRIC 14 actually explains that The minimum funding requirement at a given date can be analyzed into the contribution to cover a shortfall for past service and those to cover future service. And in our issue, as presented in this paper, the issue is relevant to future contribution for future service only. So the future contribution to cover a shortfall is not relevant. That's what I think.
Okay.
So,
that answer your question, Bob? No.
No.
Take a second pass.
Do you think about perhaps subsequent to the market drop, people had contributions,
sure.
Makeup contributions?
Yeah. And that was part of my, included in my minimum funding. That was
right.
Part of the negotiation.
So you've been contributing at a higher level than you might expect.
Higher level.
Next time you go to negotiate.
Right. Yeah. And I'm accepting of that, okay, now I need to set my minimum funding at my future service cost. I get that. But if you're telling me, no, I need to extrapolate from what my previous negotiated policy or my previous negotiation with the trustees was, and I got to continue that, and I know that's going to be way too much and way more than it's going to be than my future service cost, that's where I struggle.
Okay, I think, let me try. You see, I made a negotiation, and I negotiated funding at 100. The trustees and I agree, I think this is key, agree, that 80 of that is to cover service cost. 20 of it is to make up a deficit.
Okay.
And we, trustees and I, agree that if I pay that 20 for the next 3 years, the deficit will be covered. But I haven't renegotiated beyond that. I think Akemi is saying the thing that you look at going forward is the 80, not the 100.
Okay.
Am I correct in that, gang? Okay. So I think you all are in raging agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that clear to everybody else? John?
Just to follow up on Bob's point, I mean, I think you do have to separate the funding for a deficit from the go forward, but the issue is still whether you expect the go forward to be continue at the same rate that you've currently agreed with the trustees, or whether you expect it to be at a different rate. And IFRIC 14 requires that the estimates used for the minimum funding requirement be actually consistent with the estimates used for the defined benefit obligation. So that may not be the rate that you're currently paying. So I mean, I agree with view two. I agree with, I think view two is correct. I don't think you stop at the end of the period, but I think there is a question about how you measure that minimum funding requirement over the ongoing life. And I don't think it's actually at the rate that you have agreed for the three-year period. I think you have to estimate what that rate is going to be consistently with the estimate you use for your defined benefit obligation.
Andrew?
I think it's probably a very similar point. If you take the UK as an example, broadly the way it works is that there is a regime, which is clearly something that continues, a funding regime. Within that regime, individual groups of trustees will negotiate funding objectives, and those can be renegotiated from time to time. And then to meet those objectives, a periodic schedule of contributions is agreed. So we're clearly not just going to extrapolate the schedule of contributions. We might consider that might take the view that the funding objectives should be continued, should be extrapolated until they are themselves renegotiated. And the thing that definitely continues is the overall regime. So just another way of articulating exactly whilst I agree with view two, and there's some form of extrapolation, exactly what are we extrapolating is the issue.
Martin?
Yeah, probably to come back to your example, Wayne, when you said this 80 and this 20. Based on what? Based on IFRS, based on local requirements, on what do you base your funding? Is it 100% funding based on IFRS figures? Is it a funding based on local regime, or probably we should be a little bit more clear on that and illustrate
well,
it. But
my answer would be funding is funding. And 19 just says the obligations, what's left after you've made some contributions. So funding, I may be funding on the square root of my shoe size. But that's funding, that's not obligation.
But in general, if you have a, probably I'm wrong, if you have a kind of minimum funding obligation, the question was, what is the measure of your obligation? Because if your obligation measured according to local GAAP might be higher or lower than according to IFRS, so you might have locally an overfunding, whereas under IFRS you are fully funded.
I guess in my experience, funding requirements are set by combination of trustees and regular and actuaries. And then IFRS comes along and layers on top of that. I've never heard of anybody funding anything based on IFRS. It's something else altogether.
And could I add one thing? Actually, I agree with Wayne. Actually, paragraph 21 of IFRIC 14 explains for any factors that not specified by the minimum funding basis, the assumptions for determining future service cost and those to estimate the future minimum funding requirement contributions must be consistent, I think so. But if the minimum funding branches specify factors, as Wayne said,
yeah,
I think we should be consistent with the funding branches, as paragraph 21 of IFRIC 14 explains.
Marie, you wanted to come in, and then I'm going to call on Tony, and then circulate back to Bonnie.
Yeah, it was initially read by the Smart, so thank you for having it to the agenda. I might be mistaken, but I think in paragraph 21 and BC 30, as explained in the draft decision agenda, there is some elements, and in fact what concerns us, it was that it was in the BC that we found the solution, but I think there are some elements in IFRIC 14, so...
I don't know.
Think that BC 30 of IFRIC 14 gives you some elements on how you should account for this minimum funding requirements in the future. So in this BC, I think you do have the answer, because I said that you should take the basis of the situation existing at the end of the reporting period for the minimum funding requirements.
Kemi is agreeing with that. Okay, I've got Tony, Bonnie, and then John. And I think we may have beaten this one to death for the moment.
I was going to say, my sense is we're all saying much the same thing, that you can't assume the minimum funding requirement disappears simply because the period of the agreement disappears. We're saying you should continue to apply the principle that underpins the minimum funding requirement to make assumptions that are consistent between the way you measure the DBO and the way you measure the minimum funding requirement. And I just, my sense was, we're all saying, I think, pretty much the same thing. And whether there's a couple of simple tweaks that I haven't yet been able to think through to the words, because I think that's what ACME is trying to say as well,
yeah,
that you continue with the principle that underpins the minimum funding and that you make consistent assumptions. Just whether there's a small tweak to the words that might fix it.
John?
I mean, the agenda decision does say the estimate should not include changes to the minimum funding requirement if such changes require future negotiations with the trustees. So it seems to me clear that what the staff are proposing view two is that you assume continuation of the requirement, which I agree with. But it also, you assume continuation of the rate of funding, which I don't agree with. I mean, you can read paragraph 21, which says an entity should use assumptions consistent with the minimum funding basis. You might say the minimum funding basis includes the rate. And for any factors not specified in that basis, assumptions consistent with those used to determine the defined benefit obligation and with the situation that exists at the end of the reporting period. I think in practice, most people are looking at the defined benefit obligation and they're estimating at the post the end of the contracted period what the minimum funding rate will be, but there's a continuation of the minimum funding requirement. And that's not what the agenda decision is saying. So my assessment of what the staff's view is that in the paper is that you believe that the minimum funding base, the continuation of the minimum funding basis includes the continuation of the actual contribution rate, which I don't agree with.
Okay. What we're, just to clarify what I hope we're talking about, because it seems to me we've drifted a little bit, and I may have drifted in responding too quickly to Mark. This issue only involves a situation in which we have a defined benefit asset, and we're talking about whether or not it hits the asset recognition limitations. So in terms of general pension accounting, we're not arguing that. We're only talking about the fact situation when we have a defined benefit asset. And that's driven probably, Martin, in your response to your question, by a funding basis that's different from the way we recognize the IFRS liability, because you wind up with a debit. So, okay, having made sure that I understand that. Bonnie, I think you were next on the list.
Not sure that I have anything additional to add, but it does seem like, given some of the questions from the other members, there's still some uncertainty as to exactly how to interpret the question. So I'm not sure if that's something that Tony thinks can be fixed with some wording tweaks, or if there's a deeper disagreement as to A, what the right answer is, and B, how it's documented.
Okay. I lost control of who was in the queue. Is there anybody left? John, you had come in, but I think you probably said everything you wanted to address.
I think minimum funding basis in paragraph 21, there is a valid interpretive question as to what minimum funding basis means. Does it actually mean the objectives of the minimum funding requirement, or does it actually mean the rate at which you currently negotiated for a fixed period?
I think view two tells you the rate. That would be the way I read it.
Well, I read it the same, that I think we're all in the same place, that you continue with the principle, not necessarily the
rate.
Absolute
rate.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
The overall conclusion here and how the trustee negotiations really work. So if it's conclude with the principles as opposed to the absolute rate, I think that would be a really important clarifier to get into here somehow.
Since obviously we both read the words and came to different answers, yeah.
Yeah. And
all right. What I'm hearing is the consensus is that the agenda decision is basically right, but we need to make clear this notion of the underlying principle of the negotiation. Is that a good word? Or underlying negotiation foundation, or words to that effect?
Something along those lines.
Something along those lines have to be added to it. Okay. Previously, I volunteered Tony and John to help with drafting, so I can't do that twice. But I think it would be worthwhile to have a couple of people look at how the staff reworks this before we send it out. Bob, can I ask you to do that? And Andrew?
It has to be fine because I'm traveling.
Okay, Andrew's traveling. How about Bruce? Can you jump in on this one? Okay, just taking a look at the early drafts to make sure they are clear to you, and then we'll put it out an update. Gary, did you still want to come in, or did I just not turn off?
No, I think if we keep it to, I'm sorry, it was on.
It is on.
No, it was. No, I think we keep it to not locked into the minimum contributions of recent past, but to the objectives, because you think, well, let's say you had minimum contributions, but the objective was just to be at 100% funded. Well, at some point, the minimum contributions don't necessarily have to continue. So I think keeping it to the objectives of the funding principles is more, much more important as opposed to the absolute numbers.
Okay, I think we're all more or less together. We'll have a couple of people, Bob and Bruce, will look at the wording in advance. Kami, if you can share that with them as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Are we done?
Yes, thank you.